First, let me introduce myself. So this is me. My name is Karol Tomaszewski. I work at Objectivity. I am a .NET developer. I work on projects, web projects, when we use JavaScript heavily, and when we are using making many asynchronous calls. So that would be the discussion of today's session. We will be talk about asynchronous calls in JavaScript. But before we can begin, just for my information, who knows JavaScript? Okay, thanks. Who, at least one, make asynchronous call, doesn't matter in which language? Okay, so we've got quite a good start. Okay, so we can start. And the presentation will be with the story. So let's assume that we've got a client for which we will create the software, right? And this would be a regular client for which you know from your daily basis. You probably write software on daily basis, so yeah, you know what I'm talking about. But one thing about this client would be special. The client looks like this, and he's literally from different galaxy, different dimension, whatever. And yeah, it might be expected that this client will be interested in some in achievement which we made as a human being. He might be interested in civilization which we built, about history, technology which we are used. But this client is different. The only thing which is he is interested in is actually chips. He is a chips lover, and he can eat as many chips as we can provide to him. But he said, you know what, eventually I will come back to my galaxy and please be so kind and prepare a recipe for me so I can do the chips on my own because I love them so much that I want to share with my peers. Yeah, why not? This is quite an easy task. But one thing which needs to be mentioned here is that the only language which this client understands is actually JavaScript language. So we need to prepare a recipe in JavaScript language, which will allow our customer to prepare our chips. Nothing complicated. Yeah, so let's think what exactly needs to be done to prepare the chips. First of all, this is quite obvious, we need a potato, right? When you have got the potato, we need to do some simple actions. First one is wash the potato, then peel it, cut it, and the last one is fry it. So we need to do four simple actions, and what is important here is the order, the sequence. All those actions need to be done one by another, right? We can't just start with peeling or cutting because it just won't work. We have to make sure that they are done in the sequence which we can see here. Great, but our client is kind enough, and he said, you know what, you don't have to implement everything from the scratch. Let's assume that those actions are already implemented. I will take care about it as your customer. So our assumption is that we've got all those actions, the four actions, already implemented. Moreover, they are exposed by some public API, web API. So we can just use them and make sure that we use them in the correct order. So let's see what would be the signature of our public web API. So the first method will be wash, and it operates on string. All of them operate on strings. And we've got four more, right? We've got wash, peel, cut, and fry. So yeah, pretty easy. The work which we need to do here is just to make sure that we call them in the correct order and that we pass the parameter, take a parameter from the previous call and pass to another. Great. So let's see how it might be implemented. But first, great, let me present you what I mean when I'm talking about the when I'm talking about the public web API. So we've got the methods like this. The first one is wash, and as a parameter, we are passing potato. So for the second one, we can just take the result of this request passed here as a parameter and call the peel. And then some action on the server take place, and all of them took place exactly for 2 seconds, are executing exactly for 2 seconds, and we've got another result. So we once again can take the result, paste here, and see what is the result. So we've got everything in place. Great. So this is our assumption that we've got the public web API working. So now let's think what we can do about the JavaScript, because obviously we need to implement it in JavaScript, and how exactly you can do this. So here is the code. This is our approach with the callbacks. So we've got the page. Let me show you the page. That would be easier. This is our page, right? And on the page, we've got only the one button, which make chips. And what is going on under the cover is that when you click on the button, then this method will be executed, right? So it is binded somehow. And what we are doing here after the clicking, we've got the view model. And on the view model, we are first making sure that the user will click button exactly once. So we are disabling the button. And then we are updating the result just to inform user that something is going on. And after that, we are making our first request to the web API. And we are doing this with our service. We implement some service. We will see in a second how exactly this implemented. But right now, it's enough to say that it is using callbacks, right? So we've got a simple service, which is implementing the which can make the request with the callback. And it is taking three parameters. First one is the name of the method. Then we've got the parameter. And the third one is this one, is just the callback, right? Is the definition what needs to be done when the request will finish, right? So we are saying, OK, when it will be finished, then update the result, because we want to see it on the screen. And then just do another callback, request. Right, and for this, we are using our service once again with another parameter, and we are defining another callback. And in this callback, we are doing exactly the same. So we are updating the status and status, and we are doing another callback, and so on and so on. And at the end, when the chips are already done, then we are enabling the button once again, right? Because at the very beginning, we disable it. So now we want to make sure that user can click it once again. Great, so this is our happy path. Let's see whether it works or not. So we are clicking the button, and we can see status. Then we can see the result of first request, result of second request, third one, and the last one. And we can see the chips. So great. We almost satisfied our client. And why I'm saying almost, it is just working. But yeah, we need to remember that this is just the happy path. And what about some unexpected situation when we don't have enough water, when the knife is broken, or there is no oil, or the oil is not hot enough to fry the chips? Doesn't matter. Just some unusual situation. So let's break our code, let's say here, right, and see what will happen. So actually, washing is still working, and then something wrong will go with peel. Try it once again. We got washed potato, and nothing happened. So we don't even know that something went wrong, right? And this is not something what we want to deliver to our client, obviously. So what we can do about it? Our service, actually, is taking one more method. And this method is the definition what needs to be done in terms of something unexpected, right? So we can. On our view model, we can call the onError method, and we can pass the parameter, and hopefully something will be appear on the screen. So let's see how it will behave. Ta-da! And we've got information that method wash4 was not found. So this is actually true. But let's also notice that when I broke another method, it is still broken, right? Because I handled only the first request, right? I also need to put the error handling here, here, and here. So I already done it. This is the different the different file, and you can see that the error is handling in for all scenarios. So let's see whether this actually works for the happy path, the whole code. And it works just great. We've got chips at the end, so now let's broke whatever line we want, or even not even the. Now let's break something else, so it will be the parameter. Let's say, I don't know, something here. And try it once again. And now we've got another error that the precondition has failed, right? Because we expected something different. So great. Our product is almost ready, right? What we accomplished, we just prepared the recipe which client asked. We took care about the error handling. But there is also one small requirement from our customer, because he said, you know what? When I will come back to my galaxy, to my home, then I want to share the code with my peers. And I'm pretty sure I've got 100% sure that they will change the code, they will play with it. I don't know, just to tweak it a little bit, just to try to make it a little bit faster, or just to make it a little bit prettier, whatever. Can you please implement some mechanism which will allow them to check whether the code is still working or not, which is still valid? I mean, some mechanism which will tell them that at the end of the code, they should still expect the chips, right? Or the mechanism will tell them that, no, sorry, something is broken, and you have to revert your changes because you just break your functionality. And how do you think, what we can do in such scenario? What mechanism we can use to provide such mechanism? Do you have any idea? Anyone? Yes, exactly. This is exactly what we can do. We can prepare the unit test. So this one, okay. So we will take care about unit test. And this will exactly fulfill our requirements of our client, right? And for unit test in JavaScript, we have to choose some framework. And in this case, it will be Jasmine JavaScript. It's quite powerful and flexible framework, and it will fulfill all our requirements, all our need for this presentation. Great, so let's get back to the demo. And in our, you can see the code here. So here we've got the unit test for our project, and we've got some trivial example. And just to demonstrate how the Jasmine framework works. So what we've got here, just delete it at the very beginning. We've got just a simple unit test, which will validate whether the one is equal to one, so it will obviously pass. But I just want to explain a little bit about the structure of the unit test. So every test in Jasmine has the describe function and it function. And both of them has the same contract. I mean, they taking two parameters. First one is the string, which describe what we are testing. And the second one is the function, which is defining the behavior of the test. It is just a test, and describe is just the way to group the unit test together, right? So in this case, we've got one simple test, and we are testing whether one is equal one. So let's now see how it is, how it looks like when we actually run the test. So here we can see that the test passed, obviously, and we can see the green dot here. And here also we can see the describe and it, what we put into the describe and the it. So great. Now let's try to break our code. So now let's put here two. Let's see how it will change. So now we don't have the green dot. We've got the red X. And we've got also information from Jasmine, what went wrong, what we expected to be, and what was actually delivered. And here is the stack trace, but this is not interesting for us. Great. Before we will a little bit further, then please let me introduce to you a than method, because it will be very helpful in the asynchronous call. So done is a simple trick to test asynchronous call in JavaScript, right? Because normally, code is synchronous and we don't have to wait for anything. And if we will pass the done to the it function, then the Jasmine will know that it needs to wait for some asynchronous code, right? So let's do some simple experiment and tell Jasmine that Jasmine need to wait for the done function, but never call it, right? Let's see what will happen. So we are running the test, and we can see no results. And there is a reason for that, because Jasmine was waiting for some default time, and by default, it is 5 seconds. And after 5 seconds, he said, OK, I will no longer wait. The test just failed. And the default value can be changed by overriding this value. And yeah, this is actually the whole trick to do the asynchronous call with Jasmine framework. So if you will declare that the done function is passed, then you just have to call it. And when you call it, everything works just great. So this is one more mechanism which will help us to do asynchronous unit test. Great. OK. But before we will actually write any unit test, then let's take a look what we will test, because you don't see for now how our service looks like. And this is exactly the definition of our service. So in our service, we've got only one method. This is the callback get. And as you saw before, it took 4 parameters, the action parameter, then the callback, and the callback for failure, right? And you can see that it's very simple implementation. It is just using the Ajax function in jQuery. And it is just defining the URL for which we should make the call, and then what we should be done in terms of success and what should be done in terms of error, right? So this is our implementation. Now let's try to do the unit test. Okie dokie. Here we've got the unit test. And as you can see, we've got only one unit test. Here, we've got 2 parts of it. The first part is the mock of the request, and the second one is actually the test itself. But before we will run it, let's comment out the mock completely, right? So we are expecting the mock potato, but we will actually do the call to the web API, and we should see something different. So let's see how it will behave. Now we are waiting 2 seconds for the call. And ta-da, we've got information that we have actually washed potato, but in test, there was the mocked potato. So if we will take this washed potato, put here, and run our test once again, then after 2 seconds, we will see, ta-da, everything works fine. So now I will show you how exactly this done works. I will just delete it, right? So Jasmine is not aware that we are making any asynchronous call, right? He just can't figure it out by himself. So let's try to run our code once again. It is still passing, and it is instant, right? That is, we don't have to wait for anything. So now we can break our code, and we run it once again, and it is still passing, right? Because Jasmine don't know that it have to wait. So actually, this line is, this assert is executed when the test is already finished. So if we want to really be sure that this line was executed, then we have to use this done. OK? And now we are waiting because Jasmine knows that he needs to wait. OK, great. So this is how exactly the done function works. So now let's take a look, closer look, to our mock. In our mock, we are saying we are using the Jasmine function. This is the spyOn. A spyOn function is just creating the mock for any function which you want to mock. So in this case, we are saying, OK, we want to mock the Ajax function in jQuery. And if the new logic for this function will be this. So instead of returning a real value, we are providing our own. In this case, this is just mocked potato, right? Pretty simple. And then we are just making the call by our service, and we are checking whether the response was mocked potato or not. OK, let's run it. And it works, so great. But one thing which is important here is that when you create mock with this spy on, it means that you make the call fully synchronous, right? So it is not like this that we are sending some request to the server, we are waiting for the response, it is just invoked instantly. So you can ask, yeah, okay, great, so now we don't need this done anymore, right? Because this is needed only for asynchronous call. And our mock changed the code in the way that it is became synchronous. So yeah, let's try to delete the done and see whether it actually works. It works, so now let's try to break it. Yeah, great. So in this case, we can ask ourselves, do we really need the done here? So to answer this question, we need to ask ourselves, why do we really provide the unit test? Why we wrote the unit test at all? And we write the unit test because our customer said that he wants to make sure that doesn't matter how they will change the code, they will know whether it is broken or not, right? Because they've got unit test. So now let's go to our implementation of our service and try to break it in a way that the service will be broken. Okay, let's just make some changes to the service, right? So now, obviously, our implementation is broken. Let's see whether it works or not. We are clicking on the button, and nothing is happening, and it is because I just commented out the reaction, right? So we are making the call to the server, but we are never doing any action on when the response came to the browser. So obviously our code is broken, and we never ever get the chips from our recipe. But okay, we save because we've got the unit test. So let's go back to the unit test, and let's run it to see whether it works or not. And surprise, the unit test still works. Why is that? So the problem is that we remove the done, and now Jasmine don't wait for anything. Especially, these two lines is never executed, right? When we take a look once again what we have commented out from our service, we will see that the callback was commented out. And here, we are just using the callback to do our assert, right? So, okay, let's put the done here once again and run our test. So now the Jasmine will wait because he knows that it needs to wait. And this is broken. So in this case, actually, we need done because someone can broke our implementation of services such a way that the unit test will pass, but the code will be broken, right? So obviously, in this case, we need this done, even if our code is fully synchronous, right? It might look a little bit tricky, but the lesson learned from this example is that if you are using callback, and if you are doing the unit test for it, then you have to use the done, right? Otherwise, something bad can happen, and it would be very hard to find what actually went wrong. Okay, so let's assume what we've got. We've got recipe for our customer, we've got error handling for some unexpected situation, and we've got also the unit test. So pretty much everything what the client asked us, right? So we are in a good position, in good place, and hooray, we are almost done. And I am saying almost because let's take a look how our code actually looks. And I believe that this is not something which we want to write, and this is what you are looking at is defined as callback of hell. You can see how many indentation we've got here. It is also called, by the way, the pyramid of doom, because here we've got the bottom of the pyramid, and here we've got the sides of the pyramid. But this is not the point. This is pretty ugly code, and let's be honest, and we're not making much logic here. Here is just enabling the button, updating the status, and that's all. So for simple actions, the code looks pretty ugly, and in my opinion, it's hideous. So I don't believe that we want to provide the solution for the client like this. So we can ask, yeah, but what we can do about it? How we can change it? And as probably you expect, the solution is promise. And with Promise, our code looks totally different. But before we will go to the implementation, I will just tell a few words about promises. So promises are a little bit different from callbacks, because in callbacks, as you can see, in time when we are making the call, we have to provide the definition, the behavior. We just have to say what needs to be done. And there is no other way. It just have to be there like this. And in promise, we are just doing the action, and we are receiving the promise. Here is the implementation of promise. So with promise, it is a little bit different. We are making the call. Now you can see that our service has is taking only two parameters, not three, not four, just two. And moreover, it is returning some value, right? The callback returned nothing, and now we've got some value. And this value is actually promise. And in promise, we can use a then action, and then we'll define our behavior. So we will tell, okay, when the request will be in the browser, then we want to do this and this. And after that, when the then function is finished, we receive another promise. So we once again can use then and then and then as many times as we want. So it's unbelievably simple to chain the promises. And doesn't matter how many requests you will done, you will never ever go further and further to the right as it was in the callbacks. So this is very nice, but yeah, let's see whether it will works or not. So here we've got the example with promise. We are making the request, and let's see how it will be. Ta-da! Great, so we've got exactly the same behavior as before, but before we've got something more. We've got also error handling, right? Because now if I will break anything here and call it once again, then, sorry, nothing happened. So yeah, how we make sure that the error handling in promises are done in the correct way? This is the another file which I prepared, and here, as you can see, the error handling is already implemented, and it is done in one place, not in four, but in one. But the question is whether it will behave as we expect. So let's see. First, let's examine the happy path. So everything should work fine, and we should see chips at the end. Let's see whether it will be as I said or not. Yeah, this is the happy path. Worked great. So now let's break it here. Try it once again. Ta-da! We've got not found. So now let's break it here. So now we should get washed. And we've got information that the precondition failed. So great. Doesn't matter when something will be, where something unexpected will happen, we will always handle it in the way that we should be. So this is really great. We done it in one place, so this is really a great benefit in terms of callbacks, right? Okay, so the last thing which is missing is the unit test, right? So let's see how we can unit test the promises. And before we will go to unit test, of course, let's take a look how the service looks itself. And the service looks like this, and you might be surprised, but it is much simpler than it was in callback. It is only one line, right? So we are once again using the jQuery. Now we are using the get function. And we are just providing the URL, nothing more, right? We are just saying, okay, return the get, because get is providing us a promise. So we can return the get, and then we are just using the promises. Great. So now let's see how we can mock them, how we can create the unit test for it. And unit test for it looks like this. And again, it is exactly the same as before. Here we've got the mock for it, and here we've got the test itself. So let's put it down here. Great. The mock, as you can see, is much more complicated. It's harder to write. It's no doubt about it. But it is, from the other hand, it is not so complicated. Here we need to use the deferred object, and I don't want to go with details how exactly it works, but this is something what needs to be used in terms to mock the promise. So we are using creating the deferred object, then you are saying, OK, when the deferred will be resolved, then this value needs to be used. And at the end, we are mocking our function exactly the same as we done before. So we are saying, OK, we want to mock the Ajax function in jQuery. And when the value will be returned, then it should be our mocked deferred object, right? And actually, the promise from this deferred object. And after that, we are doing the call exactly the same as we done in our code. So we are making the promise get, then we take the promise. And with the then function, we are doing the check whether we have got something correct or not. Great. So now let's see whether the code works or not. Yeah, so our promise is working and everything is great. So now let's think, do we need this done or not? Do we dealing with the synchronous code or asynchronous? And we can see that we are creating the deferred object. We are saying what needs to be done, when it should be resolved. And it is resolved in this place. So again, this is the same history. Our code became fully synchronous, so we don't need this done. Let's comment it out. Let's see whether it still works. And it still works, right? Because our code is still synchronous. As you can remember, in callbacks, we've got some funny story that when we delete this done, then we could break our code in a way that the code was broken and unit test was still passing. So let's see if we can do exactly the same with promise. Doesn't matter how hard we will try to break this implementation, it's just not possible. If we will break it somehow, it will just explode. It's just one line of code, and we can't break it. So in this case, we don't have the same issue as we have with the callbacks, right? Doesn't matter if we will actually use done or not. We can be sure that our unit test will stay robust, and it will do exactly what we expect to do. Great. So let's assume a quick recap what we accomplished. Our client asked us for a recipe and to handle all unexpected cases, and we've done it. And we also provide a mechanism which will help him to distinguish whether the change code is still working and valid or something is not working correctly, so the code needs to be reverted to the previous version. And this is pretty much what we want to achieve, right? So I hope that now you can clearly see that the promises are much better than callbacks and all the benefits of using the promises, in spite the promises are just a little bit harder to understand and to try to use them, especially when we're talking about the unit test. But yeah, let's make a quick recap summary. What is the strength of promises? So first of all, it's very easy to change them, right? We just can get rid of all the callback hell. The next way is just much simpler handling of errors, especially if you want to react exactly in the same way. I don't know, you just want to show some toast information that something went wrong and that's all, then it's really the way to go with promises. The unit test doesn't matter if you will use this done method or not use it, then you really can be sure that the unit tests will do what you, why you write them, right? So the unit tests are really nice and you don't have to know all the details, it just works. And it's also worth to mention that since ECMAScript 6, the promises are just native, so it means that this is built-in feature which you can use and take for granted. You don't have to use some extra libraries, frameworks, whatever. You can just use it, so this is very nice. And in this presentation, of course, we won't go through the benefits of promises, but one more which I want to mention is the parallel request. So let's imagine the situation that you are doing many requests in the same time. You're not waiting for the response. You are just making two, three, or whatever calls. But you are interested, you want to react only when all of them are finished, right? Because the information is not complete until all the requests are finished. So in callbacks, it's just the thing which you have to do by yourself. You just to implement the mechanism to check whether all the finished or not. And with promise, you've got the mechanism which is called promise all, and then you can just say, okay, when all will finish, then whatever will happen. There is also another method which is called promise race, and this promise work oppositely to promise all. It react on the first response. So let's imagine that you've got the service and you want to download some photo, but you want to make sure that you download it as fast as you can. So you've got many servers from which you want to download them, and you ask for them parallelly, right? And you want to react as soon as the first request will come, and you don't care about any other. So in these terms, the promise race fit perfectly. You can just say, okay, when the first one will come, then I will display it, and I don't care about anything else. So this is really something nice to use, and there are many other features of promises which are very useful, but of course in some complicated scenarios. And I want to say a little bit about alternatives in the promises, because at the very beginning I said that we will be talking about the way to handle asynchronous calls of the JavaScript, so we go in details about callbacks and promise. But also we've got another mechanism, which I just want to mention here. The other way to handle asynchronous call is yield, which you probably know from C#. It is not very popular. You can, for example, find it in the BOA framework for Node.js. But it is available in JavaScript. And one more thing which is worth mentioning is async await, which, once again, you probably know from C#. But the nice thing is that it will be native since ECMAScript 7. So this is totally different approach. It is nothing in common with promise, in spite under the hood the promise is used, but it is really different philosophy and something which you can use in the future. So yeah, just as a head up for you to know that probably you can see such code in JavaScript. And at the very end of my presentation, I want to show you something special. I mean, to encourage you to use the promises, I want to show you some visualizer of promises. So in our case, as you remember, we've got a very simple scenario when we just chain the promises, right? So we've got one call, then another one, and it was just a chain of four actions. But with promises, you are not limited just for chaining. You can join the promise as you wish. It's your decision what you will do with this, and it might be a little bit too much at the very beginning. So here is some nice tool just to see what is the flow of the promises, right? How you will chain them, what will happen, and who is the mechanism when you can see step by step what exactly is going on. So you can just visualize to better understand how promises works and how exactly it all happened. Here is another example with promise all, which I mentioned you. So we are reacting only when all the promises resolved. And yeah, I really encourage you to play a little bit with this tool, because it helped to understand how the promises works. And as soon as you will start using it, it really brings you a great benefit. So yeah, this is actually everything what I have for today, unless there is some questions which I'm happy to answer. Okay, thank you.